Kettlebell Drenga. The battle for the title of North American champion draws nearer, and the spoils are beginning to emerge through the mist. Morpheus Training has entered the fray as a new sponsor of the 2023 WKSF Open North American Championship. There will be three M7 heart rate monitors added to the hoard. Register today for your chance to stake your claim. Registration is available now for only $100, with raffle prizes for all competitors and the opportunity to win cash prizes for top performers. We'll be back at the Athlete Lab in Little Canada, Minnesota on Saturday, October 14th, and accepting video submissions for online competitors. Go to TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com to register today. Come and answer the call of battle. Join us and fight for your clan. Fight for yourself. Claim your spoils and your glory. Sign up now, and may your name forever ring out in the Hall of Champions. Sign up today at TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com. Welcome to the Platform Podcast, where we talk to coaches, athletes, experts, and real people to learn about their approaches to training, nutrition, mindset, and much more. I am your host, Jordan Kundi Wright, founder and head coach of the Twin Cities Kettlebell Club, and our mission is to become our best selves through sport. This episode is presented by Morpheus Training. They're a new sponsor of the 2023 WKSF Open North American Championship, and I am incredibly excited to have them as a partner. Now, we are 8 weeks out from competition day, and that's apropos because I first learned of the Morpheus Training System while taking my conditioning coach certification from 8 weeks out, which is a certification by Joel Jamison, who is one of the world's preeminent MMA conditioning coaches and also happens to be the person behind the Morpheus Training System. And most of what I'm going to be discussing on today's episode comes from what I learned in that certification. A lot of it I knew from before, but he really put it together in a very cogent and applicable way with the system behind it that I am incredibly proud of and that I really, really enjoy using. So it was a very, very valuable certification, and I really love this system. Now, what makes the Morpheus Training System different from other heart rate-based training systems is that it adjusts your daily heart rate training zones based on your HRV test that you take every morning, which helps you better train in accordance with your readiness on a given day. And with so many athletes in kettlebell sport doing a lot of other adjunct training, it's really important that we balance our daily stress, our training stress, with our daily recovery level. So I really love this approach. And additionally, if your coach is on the Morpheus coaching platform like I am, you can grant your coach access so that they can see your data and see your longitudinal trends on HRV, sleep, training intensity, steps, and many more other data points, and how that correlates to their prescriptions of your program as well as your performance within those systems. There's way more to it than I can articulate in this brief intro, but it really is an excellent tool to add to your toolbox to help you progress with data-driven insights and a system of thinking that takes into account your training stress and your recovery. Could not give it a higher recommendation. And if you want your chance to win a Morpheus M7 heart rate monitor, register today for the World Kettlebell Sport Federation Open North American Championship on October 14th. And as a reminder, it is also an AKLU qualifier event for Team USA. So you can come compete for the North American Championship and qualify for the opportunity to represent your country in Poland in 2024. I hope to see you there. And of course, I'm incredibly grateful you listen to this podcast. The best way you could support me is to go sign up for the WKSF North American Championship. Tell a friend or two, bring your team, share it on social media, all of that good stuff. just go to our website, TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com, for more details. And if you haven't already, be sure to leave a rating and review of the platform podcast. Click the like and subscribe button. Share it with friends. And, of course, support our sponsors, whose affiliate links you'll find in the episode notes. And last but not least, if you want help reaching your goals without wasting time, please fill out the coaching interest form linked in the show notes. I help athletes of all levels seeking to become their best selves using my integrated coaching approach. You can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Twin Cities Kettlebell Club, or email me at twincitieskettlebellclub@gmail.com. Now, let's step onto the platform for Energy Systems 101. All right, welcome into this week's episode of the Platform Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Kundi Wright, coming back to you for another episode. We are now 8 weeks out from the WKSF North American Championships here in Little Canada, Minnesota. So obviously I'm recording this on a Saturday. It's probably going to be 7 weeks out by the time this episode is released. But trying to take advantage of a little bit of quiet time at the house with my wife and kids up at Grandma and Grandpa's, enjoying some lake time, soaking up that end of summer gloriousness here in Minnesota. And I am in quarantine because of my COVID exposure. After Riddle Struck, which I alluded to on, well, I didn't allude to, I explicitly called it out on the last episode we released. So still recovering. I'm feeling much better today than I was, but still not allowed to interact with other humans yet. And yeah, didn't want to expose the kids or the grandparents to the COVID. So here we are. And I decided on this episode, because we are 8 weeks out, I'm going to get into energy systems, right? The 8 weeks out certification, 8 weeks out from Joel Jameson, the certified conditioning certification, or certified conditioning coach certification, is honestly one of the best certifications I've probably ever taken. And it has changed my approach to how I coach kettlebell sport, probably more than anything else. And I think it's a big credit to Joel Jameson and his system, his approach to systems thinking here, and understanding how these systems apply. And the great thing is, the reason I didn't make this title specific to kettlebell sport is energy systems apply to any sport. Right. Understanding how your body creates and utilizes energy is really important to understand, because depending on what sport you're playing, you will need to make different training recommendations or different training choices. From the perspective of an athlete, recommendations from the perspective of a coach, you'll need to make different decisions based on the demands of the particular sport. But in order to understand how to apply that to a particular sport, first you need to understand the basics of what the energy systems are. So this is really Energy Systems 101, right? This is just the intro to energy systems. I'm going to try and keep this not super sciencey, because I know I can go down the rabbit hole of kinesiology and down the rabbit hole of the scientific terminology and everything, and you can lose people right when you start talking about substrates and the Krebs cycle and glycolysis and all of the things, which those are all important things for me as a coach to understand, but for a lifter, or just my general audience, they may or may not care about the specific science behind it. So I'm going to try and keep it fairly high level with the caveat that you can go much, much deeper. And I reserve the right to go much deeper and nerd out on later episodes where we can go in a little bit more detail on each of these energy systems and maybe talk a little bit more about the implications of how you apply this knowledge to kettlebell sport and to other sports. But first, let's start with just the basics of energy systems. So what is energy, I guess, is probably the first thing. Energy is the metabolic function. When we're talking about the energy systems, these are the systems within your body that are responsible for the breakdown and transfer of energy from one source to the source systems within your body. Right? So if you remember... the first law of thermodynamics, I think, energy is neither created nor destroyed. It simply changes forms, right? The energy systems of our body is how we transform energy from its source to be able to utilize it within our own systems, within our own body, right? So the body requires energy at all times in order to maintain function, right? In order to keep functioning, your body requires energy. That energy comes from the foods and beverages that we ingest. Obviously, food is our primary source of energy, but you can also obviously get calories from drinks as well. So we ingest food and drinks, and we measure energy in units of kilocalories, typically. That is the most common unit of measurement. It's kind of the standard unit of measurement, thankfully, across all cultures. We don't have the metric system versus imperial system for measuring calories. Thankfully, this is one thing we've kind of agreed on as a standardized measure is calories. And those calories are composed of macros and micros, right? So, you know, protein, fat, and carbohydrates. Alcohol is technically a macro, but we can't use it, so we keep that one out. And then micronutrients are your vitamins, minerals, right, that your body needs in order to have healthy metabolic function, right? And those macros and micros come from the foods and beverages that you eat, and your body breaks those down into fuel sources that your body can use for tissue building, repair, hormones, etc. And so what those various macros are broken down into depends on the macro, right? But you know, like carbohydrates, all carbohydrates are broken down into saccharides. They're broken down into sugars. They're broken down into simple sugars. Proteins are broken down into amino acids. Fats are broken down into glycerides, right? So they're all broken down into smaller, that, you know, we start with calories. Calories are comprised of macros. The macros are then broken down into their, you know, atomic units that make up those sources, right? But the body has basically three choices on what to do with anything that we ingest for energy. It can utilize it immediately in the bloodstream. And like the best example I can think of this as it pertains to what we do, like if you've ever been done with a kettlebell sport set or just a really intense workout and your hands are shaking, right? You're like, you can't stop shaking because your body has utilized a lot of glycogen and it's very low on glycogen. And so your hands will keep shaking until you ingest something. And typically what works best to stop the shakes is taking in some type of carbohydrate, right? And your body takes that carbohydrate, gets it into the bloodstream and utilizes it immediately because your hands are shaking because you are almost out of the available glycogen in your body, right? So you've burned through a lot of available glycogen. Your body needs more. As soon as you replenish it, it is immediately used in the bloodstream, right? And then your hands stop shaking miraculously, right? This is one of the three options. The second that most of us are familiar with is it can be stored for future use. And then the other option, aside from storing it as glycogen, is we can store things as body fat. And that is, like I said, something we're all very familiar with. And a lot of people hate that their body stores excess energy as body fat. But it is very useful, and it can come in handy, especially in the event of famine, which is why our body does it. So energy can be stored for future use. And then the other option that a lot of people don't remember to to include is it can also be excreted. You know, if you think about when you go way over your average caloric intake, there's a reason that you don't just immediately gain a whole bunch of body fat from one overindulgence. Your body will generally just excrete the extra. It will take what it needs for sure. And, mostly it will just excrete the extra. So you're going to take a nice healthy poop. you'll take maybe a couple extra poops, you know, the day after Thanksgiving or whatever. And assuming that you return back to your normal caloric intake, you shouldn't really see any excess fat gain from one-time indulgences or infrequent indulgences where you go over your typical caloric intake. Your body will use some of the extra. Maybe it will store a little bit of it, but for the most part, it excretes the extra, right? So your body breaks food down into the fuel sources. It uses it in the bloodstream immediately if it's needed. It stores any excess for future use, and the rest it excretes, right? So that's generally just the basics of how the energy cycle begins, right? Is we intake our food. It's broken down into fuels that can be used, and then stored or excreted depending on what your body needs at that given time. Now, we talked about the unit of measurement for energy is a calorie, but the atomic unit of energy at the cellular level is adenosine triphosphate. Now, that is the nerdiest thing I'm going to say on this podcast. Adenosine triphosphate is also known as ATP. You've probably heard the term ATP because adenosine triphosphate is a mouthful, right? So I won't continue saying it. We're just going to refer to it as ATP. But if you want to look it up, that's what we're talking about. So your body breaks down all macros into ATP, because that is what your body uses at the cellular level as an energy unit, right? So that is how we define energy at the most microscopic unit possible. That's what the atomic unit is, right? The smallest possible increment is ATP. So when we think about ATP, your body has basically two pathways that it can use to break food nutrients down, food and beverage units, you know, into ATP. One is with oxygen, and that you'll typically heard referred to as aerobically. And the second is without oxygen, and that is what you hear referred to as anaerobically, the anaerobic system. Now, there is a misconception out there that the energy systems basically function like a light switch, or like you toggle, you do a state transition where you go from, I'm using the aerobic system. Now I switch over to the anaerobic system, and like, there's no more, we just toggle between those. Like, we go either it's anaerobic or, and when we can't breathe, or when we don't have enough oxygen, or it's aerobic when we can breathe, and we just flip back and forth between the two. That is a misconception. There is the concept of the anaerobic threshold, which is the point at which your body switches over to the anaerobic system in absence of oxygen required to keep up with the energy demand. But it doesn't mean that you are no longer using your aerobic system. It simply means that your body has now flipped over to using the anaerobic system in addition to the aerobic system. You are always using your aerobic system. We'll say that again. You are always using your aerobic system. So long as you are breathing, you are using your aerobic energy system. You are not always using your anaerobic energy system. Hopefully right now, as I'm sitting here in a relatively low intensity state of living, recording this podcast, I am not using my anaerobic energy system. I could be using it in a very small proportion, and that's really the way that we should think of it, is that the energy demands of the system come from a mix of the aerobic and anaerobic, pathways. And there are actually three primary energy systems, and they're used in different proportion, depending on a number of factors. So the composition of that mix is mediated by a few factors. The first of which is exercise intensity, or activity intensity, if we're setting aside intentional exercise. So the intensity of the activity. And this can be seen graphically on what we call the force fatigability curve. And the force fatigability curve is essentially a graphical representation of the correlation between the need for maximum force and power across the time dimension of sustainability. So if you put time on the x-axis, you know, going out to infinity, and power need on the y-axis going vertically, the higher the need for power, the less duration you'll be able to sustain it. The lower the need for power, the longer duration you'll be able to sustain it. So that is called the force fatigability curve. And the higher that requirement is, the less time we can sustain it, the more it needs to be fueled and supported by anaerobic pathways. The longer the duration is, the higher the percentage of aerobic energy system that needs to be leveraged, right? So the lower intensity it is, the more you're going to be able to sustain it. That's going to be fueled by aerobic capability. The shorter the duration, but the higher the power need, the more it's going to need to be fueled anaerobically, right? So that is one component of the mix, right? Is exercise intensity. Another is fuel availability. And I alluded to this a little bit earlier when I was talking about the example of you eat some simple carbs after an intense training session because it makes your hands stop shaking, right? Your body will always choose the path of least resistance first. So that means it chooses the simplest fuel source it can use first when there is an increased energy demand, right? So it's going to first immediately utilize whatever is available in the bloodstream, right? And that is usually sugar, right? So when there is sugar in the bloodstream, it will use that first. This is why the first 5 minutes of exercising is almost always the shittiest part of it, because even if you're doing something relatively low intensity, your body's going to use blood sugar, available blood sugar first. So it usually goes sugars, you know, simple sugars, then more complex sugars like carbohydrates are the next preferred fuel source, because it still prefers sugar as the primary energy source, but it has to break it down a little bit if it's a more complex carbohydrate, right? But it can use it. Then fats are the preferred source, because those take a little bit more energy to break down, but they're also a very sustainable fuel. And when you're doing aerobic training, a lot of what you're utilizing is actually fat, right? That's why you'll have people talking about low intensity exercise is fat burning exercise, because that is a true statement, because the preferred fuel source is fat. Now, that doesn't mean that lower intensity exercise is better for body composition change than higher intensity exercise. It can actually be quite the opposite sometimes, but it does mean that while you're training at lower intensities, the body's preferred fuel source is fat, right? So but it will first use the available carbohydrates. But if the exercise intensity is low enough, it will switch to a greater mix of the carbohydrate, or excuse me, of the fat-based energy over carbohydrates, right? But it goes sugar, carbs, fat, protein, right? And then I guess you could also put ketones, right? Ketone bodies are also in there as another fuel. So, you know, this relates to the metabolic flexibility that you may or may not possess. And if you're not familiar with the term metabolic flexibility, what that means is your body's ability to utilize different macronutrients to create energy, right? So this is where long-term, and I emphasize long-term elimination or restriction of a particular macronutrient may change your body's ability to effectively break down a certain type of food. So if you consistently eliminate carbs, your body will struggle to leverage carbs as an effective fuel source, right? If you eliminate fat, you know, you go on the high carb, low fat diet that was super popular in the 90s, this is going to make it really challenging for your body to leverage fat as a fuel source, right? So this metabolic flexibility can be tuned by dietary choices, like going keto, for example. You can choose to go keto for a period of time to improve your metabolic flexibility, to improve your body's ability to use fat as its primary fuel source, right? And it will convert fat into those ketone bodies in absence of carbohydrate energy, so that your body can use that in the brain, because that is still your body's preferred brain fuel, is carbohydrate energy, sugar energy. So those saccharides that carbohydrates break down into is still the preferred source of energy for the brain, which is why you'll hear the term of brain fog within people that try and go keto, and it takes a while for the body to adapt to the absence of carbohydrates. And one of the common things is brain fog. You'll also hear the keto flu, right? This is your body needing long-term elimination of a particular macronutrient to force adaptation. It can really suck, and it can be really hard, and it's not necessarily always desirable. But there are periods, there are times when it might be beneficial to you to eliminate carbohydrates, really improve your body's sensitivity to carbohydrates, but also improve its ability to use fat as its primary source of fuel. But again, that metabolic flexibility is mediated and can be tuned by dietary choices, particularly in the long term. Now, fuel availability is where we start talking about performance nutrition, right? And this is a much more short-term type of application of understanding what your body needs in order to fuel its workouts. So this is one of the reasons I advocate for my athletes to not go low carb, is because in order to perform at this sport, we need carbohydrate energy, and I'll get into the reasons why in the second half of the episode here. But performance nutrition is about timing your nutrition intake to make sure that you have the fuels available necessary at the times that you need them to be available, and understanding what your body's preferred fuel is, and understanding what the fuel source needed for the intensity of the exercise that you're trying to perform is, right? So this is where performance nutrition comes in. So metabolic flexibility is done longitudinally and can be tweaked longitudinally by dietary choices. Performance is more short term and can be leveraged. You can leverage short-term choices to affect your performance based on the right nutrients available based on what you need for what you're trying to do. And then the last factor that I called out is the within the composition of the mix is individual variance. And I mean that from the musculature that a person has, because I think that's the strongest, probably the strongest indicator of what type of fuel that your body will prefer is based on what type of muscle tissues that you have. If you tend to be a less explosive athlete who has better endurance, you're probably going to prefer fat as your body from, and I mean this at the cellular level, if we looked at the mix of what is actually being utilized by your body, those people probably actually use body fat fairly well, right? They use dietary fat fairly well as a fuel source. And therefore they can do aerobic endurance activities fairly well. People that are more explosive have larger muscle mass, typically need more carbohydrate energy, and their body burns through a lot more carbohydrate energy as a result. Big muscles use a lot of carbs. They can store a lot of carbs. That's where you, again, glycogen goes into your muscle bodies and into your liver, right? So this is where your body, this is where big muscles tend to prefer carbohydrates. So you'll need more carbohydrates. This is why bodybuilders don't go low carb until they're really close to their stepping on stage, because it actually helps them build muscles and keep their muscles large when they use carbohydrates. And then it's they go low carb later to help reveal the muscles that they have by eliminating some body fat, taking away the body's preferred fuel source, making it burn fat instead. And so then they get that peeled, shredded look that they want for on stage. But I digress. This is not a bodybuilding podcast. So I'm going to take a quick break. And when I come back, we are going to talk about the three energy systems. Kettlebell Drenga, the gods have smiled upon us. We have been honored by the American Kettlebell Lifters Union to host the WKSF North American Championships for the next 3 years. Honorable warriors of the steel will travel from far and wide to battle for the title of champion, and you can earn your place to represent the USA team at the WKSF World Championships. Registration is available now for only $100, with raffle prizes available for all competitors and the opportunity to win cash prizes for the top performers. We'll be back at the Athlete Lab in Little Canada, Minnesota on Saturday, October 14th, and accepting video submissions for online competitors. Go to TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com to register today. Come, answer the call of battle. Join us and fight for your clan. Fight for yourself, claim your spoils, and your glory. Sign up now, and may your name forever ring out in the Hall of Champions. Sign up today at TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com. All right, so now that we've kind of given an overview of the energy cycle and a high-level overview of the energy systems, let's talk about the three energy systems leveraged in training. So the first energy system is the aerobic energy system. Now, don't confuse these energy systems with the two pathways that I talked about, because you can create ATP aerobically and anaerobically, but there are three energy systems, one of which does happen to be the aerobic energy system because it requires oxygen. Now, it has the lowest power output, but it has the longest duration and it makes it the most sustainable. The majority of energy production for anything that lasts more than 60 seconds is the aerobic energy system. So I'll say that again. The majority of all required energy for anything that lasts more than 60 seconds is the aerobic energy system. It's the most flexible system because it can use carbs, fats, and proteins to create energy. And it also creates the least cellular byproducts. Again, I'm not going to go into the very nerdy science of all of the substrates and cellular byproducts and the Krebs cycle and all of that, at least not on this episode. But just know that the aerobic energy system is the one that creates the least amount of cellular byproduct because your body is able to process the byproducts that are being created. Now, there are always byproducts being created because of the process of ATP conversion, but there are also other processes to recycle those byproducts and reuse them, right? The rate at which those things are produced is what predicates whether or not you can continue on with your exercise, right? The inability to continue on is usually dictated by the body's inability to keep up with the rate at which byproducts are being produced, right? And that's when you reach that threshold towards the top of your capability that your options are pass out or puke, right? If you've ever pushed to that point, that's when you're in so much oxygen debt, right? Your CO2 tolerance will largely dictate how far you can push or how close to that you can push. But when you're in that oxygen debt and there is more byproduct being created than your body can recycle, that's when you start reaching that pass out or puke threshold. That's your lactate threshold. We'll get into that another time. But the aerobic energy system creates the least cellular byproduct, and it does so at a rate that your body is able to recycle it, right? So that it doesn't, that's why you can do these things for extended periods of time. That's where if you're well controlled on your pacing, you can do a 100-mile run nonstop, which is still crazy to me. It requires a high level of training of this system, but there are human beings that are capable of that because the aerobic energy system allows them to keep doing so because it's not creating a high level of cellular byproduct, or at least not creating at a rate at which that it cannot recycle it. And that is an important thing to understand about this energy system. It's the reason that I started with it, because it is the foundation upon which all other energy systems sit. So even when we go over our aerobic threshold, the minute that we stop whatever exercise it is that put us over threshold, the minute that we stop, the mix of aerobic goes back up again, and your body is cycling those byproducts. And how strong and well-developed your aerobic energy system is what allows you to process the byproduct from the other systems, right? And from the aerobic system, but from the other systems, it allows you to catch up, right? So that's where if you're doing interval training, for example, like when we do our lovely favorite 1 minute on, 1 minute off, right? You do 1 minute on, 1 minute off. The reason you can do that is because as soon as you stop, right, the reason those workouts don't suck as much as some of the other ones is that as soon as you stop and you get to put the bells down, your aerobic energy system spins back up to a higher proportion, and it starts helping you process that byproduct that has come from going over threshold, right? So that's why it's not until later when you start getting into minutes 12, 13, 14, 15, whatever, 20, 25, depending on how fit you are. But it's not until you get into those higher interval numbers that your body is no longer able to keep up with the byproduct that's being produced in those over threshold intervals, but it's that aerobic system kicking in those rest intervals to process all of that byproduct. Now, the second system is the anaerobic glycolysis energy system. So I lied. I said adenosine triphosphate was going to be the nerdiest thing I was going to say, but I can't help what the name of the energy system is. It's called the anaerobic glycolysis energy system. You'll also sometimes hear it referred to as the glycolytic energy system or the sugar system, depending on how simplified we're talking about it. But anytime you hear the word glycolysis, that is the breakdown of carbohydrates into those saccharides, right? Breaking it down into glycogen, right? So this is where we have higher power output, moderate duration. And by moderate, I mean that you can sustain a high level of power output for 30 to 90 seconds. So equating this to kettlebell sport, think of those last minute and a half in a long cycle set where you know that you can sprint because you've maintained your pace well enough in the first 8 minutes that you know that you can sprint to the finish. Well, in that sprint to the finish, you're going to rely pretty heavily on this anaerobic glycolysis system. And you know that if you tried to push at that pace earlier, that you would not be able to sustain it because you would produce too much byproduct, right? That's the reason you can't sustain it. Your muscles would produce too much cellular byproduct that your aerobic system wouldn't be able to process fast enough, and you would bonk, you would crash out, right? You would hit that threshold and you wouldn't be able to keep going, right? But you know, really good lifters save this for that final push. Now, if you come out too early and you push too hard and you get over this threshold too much, this is where you can have those death minutes, you know, minute seven, minute eight, where if you were sustaining a pace that pushed you outside of your normal aerobic capacity, and now you are producing too much cellular byproduct, you end up crashing because you can't keep up. You can't do this for more than 90 seconds, right? That's typically the end range that you can do it, right? Now, again, if you decrease your intensity, your aerobic system can spin back up and create a higher proportion or account for a higher proportion of the output necessary, right? But as we know, heart rate doesn't come down as quickly while you're still moving. So this is where if you come out too hot in a kettlebell sport set and your pace is too high, you have to either put the bells down because you crash, or you have to slow way down. And you'll see people sometimes will do what I call like a rescue break in the middle of a set, where they'll be doing, they'll be cruising at 8 or 9 RPMs, and then they'll get to a certain point at like 7 or 8 minutes when they realize they can't keep going or they're going to bonk. And so they either slow way down or they completely stop doing reps and they just rack. And that is giving their aerobic energy system a chance to clear some of that byproduct. And they're hoping that their heart rate is going to come down, or at least it's going to stop going up, right? That gives their energy system a chance, their aerobic energy system a chance to catch up with the cellular byproducts that are being produced by this anaerobic glycolysis, energy system, right? So that's kind of how this applies. Now, this system is not as metabolically flexible. It requires carbohydrates, right? It burns sugar, hence the name glycolysis, right? It requires carbs to do this. So it uses available glycogen as the source, and it creates byproducts, and it creates more cellular byproducts than the aerobic system. But it produces less cellular byproduct than our last energy system, which is the phosphocreatine system, also known as the ATP-CP system. Right? That is adenosine triphosphate creatine phosphate pathway, right? So that's where it's the phosphocreatine system is because it's using creatine phosphate. So I like to think of this. This is like, you know, going back to the old Fast and the Furious movies, right? This is when they hit the NOS, right? And you've only got a little bit of it, but it's that little fucking extra boost that makes you shoot over the, you know, shoot over the train through the open window of a helicopter and land on the back of a flatbed truck, right? Right. I haven't watched a Fast and the Furious movie since like the third one, I think, but you get my point. It is the highest power output. So if you're thinking Olympic weightlifting, when you see somebody going for a one rep PR world record, right? Lasha is going to, you know, snatch 300 kilos. He's leaning heavily on this phosphocreatine system because it produces the highest power output for the lowest duration. It can only sustain output of 10 to 15 seconds before it needs a break to reboot, right? And that reboot time is in the order of minutes, right? So it's like 4 to 10 minutes to regenerate enough ATP-CP to be able to go again, right? So this is where if you're doing maximal output training, especially on really explosive movements like Olympic weightlifting, this is why if you're shortchanging your rest intervals, you're fucking yourself over from a performance standpoint, because your system needs time to regenerate the energy required to move that weight at that explosive pace. Now, this system is not metabolically flexible at all. There is nothing you can use other than ATP-CP for this system, right? It generates the highest rate of fatigue, right? Again, think of maximal output effort, right? There's a reason you can't do, you know, 10 sets of 5 at max for power cleans, right? You do 3 sets of 1 to 3 reps, right? And if you're doing 3 reps, you're not doing your max. You're doing a percentage of your max, right? But if you're doing max, you're doing like 3 to 5 sets, maybe at 1 rep max. And you're taking, like I said, 4 to 10 minutes break between each of those efforts, if you're truly trying to get max, right? And that's because it produces the highest rate of fatigue, has the greatest level of cellular byproduct. So if you continue pushing at that duration and you don't take those rest intervals, you're going to hit that lactate threshold much, much faster. And that's where your performance will degrade and your risk of injury will go up significantly, right? So this is why it's important that you understand how the demands of what you're trying to do go into the sport that you're trying to perform. So in summary, we have a constant need for energy. The foods and beverages that we choose to consume are broken down, and we utilize it immediately in the bloodstream or store it for future use or excrete it. We break that food down into ATP, either with oxygen or without, and depending on the intensity and duration of the chosen sport, will dictate which of the 3 energy systems we use. The aerobic is the most sustainable, longest lasting energy system. It accounts for the highest proportion of the energy that we use. The anaerobic glycolysis energy system is the next. It's the moderate intensity that can sustain us for 30 to 90 seconds, and it accounts for our explosive movements within our more sustained efforts. And then there is the phosphocreatine system, which is for our very short, highest intensity, highest power output efforts. So that is a basic summary of the energy systems. I hope it wasn't too sciencey. I hope I gave you some nuggets on how you can apply it. But I also hope I didn't go too in depth in this episode, because I really just wanted to give you an overview of the energy systems. But please hit me up with questions. If you find this useful, maybe we'll do a deep dive on each of these energy systems and how they can be applied or how they can be developed and trained, because and what percentage of your training time you want to allocate to training these different systems, because there's only so much training time that you have available, and making the appropriate choice based on your sport, based on your need, is very, very important. So We'll get into that maybe on another subsequent episode where we go a little bit more nerdy on the strength and conditioning side. I hope you found the episode useful. Please hit me up. Let me know if you have any questions. Share it with a friend. And if you didn't find it useful or you found it boring, also share that with me because I want to hear that feedback as well. But thank you very much. We will see you next time on the Platform Podcast. And I hope to see you on the platform at the WKSF Open North American Championship coming up in 8 weeks. Until next time, be well. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Platform Podcast. We'll be back with a new episode soon. Please be sure to leave a rating and review of the Platform Podcast in your app of choice. Support our work by supporting our affiliates. And of course, if you have questions or you want help reaching your goals, reach out to me. Until next time, thanks for listening.